Hi, my name's Andy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Andy.
It's really nice to be with you guys today. I haven't been out of my house in a long time because of this virus situation, and I've been self-quarantined, I guess is the term. And so when I heard that people were doing these Zoom meetings, I was pretty skeptical. But having done a couple of them, I don't know if it's really a replacement for when we're meeting face-to-face and seeing each other, but gosh, it's really nice to be able to see you guys, at least in this format, and hear your experience, so thanks. So I am an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is March 21st, 2007, and so I celebrated 13 years yesterday, and first time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know if I was an alcoholic. I don't think I knew what an alcoholic was when I first came, so I don't know how I could have known if I was one. The reason I came to that AA meeting was because my wife had finally had enough, and she left. And she got in the car and took off for her mom's place, and this was the last trick I had up my sleeve. I was going to call AA and go to an AA meeting, and that would bring her back home. And I called up the number in the book at the time and asked them if I could go to an AA meeting, and got the location of one that night, and I was all set. So then I called her up, and I'm like, oh, it's okay. You can come back now. I'm going to an AA meeting. And she's like, good luck, you know, just kept on going. And so I went to that meeting, and it was a meeting in Charlottesville on a Friday night. And, I know there was something that happened in that first meeting where I don't even know what I was identifying with. I don't even know what was people saying, but it might have just been, it just felt like that was the right place. And, I remember people putting their hands out and just really honestly wanting to help me. And that made an impression on me. Before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, my drinking had gotten to the point where, I worked from home. So I would, right before my wife would come home from work, I'd go and I'd get like a 12 pack of beer, and I would try to drink 11 of those 12 so that, actually, I guess the way this really went down is I'd get like two containers. It was 2 6-packs, 2 12-packs, whatever. I would drink all of one, throw all the wrapping and cans and stuff away. And then she just needs to see the first one of that next one. So she thinks the smell of alcohol, it's just this one beer that I've been having. And, so then she'd come home and then I'd drink through the rest of that and pretty drunk and, get through the evening to the point where it's time to go to bed. And I remember she would just, the one thing she would always want me to do is just to come to bed with her, right? She just wanted to see me put the lights out, put my head down and, end the day. But I could never do that. I just wanted her to go. And I would remember sitting in my living room and looking down the hallway, and she'd sit in there in bed reading, and I could see the light under the door, and I knew that she was still awake reading. And it was just minutes and minutes of frustration seeing that she's still awake. But the moment that I'd see that light off under her door, this is the best. Now it's like, I can drink the way that I want to. And I'd go to the refrigerator and I'd get whatever I wanted. And I'd get all the bottles and I'd spread them out in my fingers so they didn't clink. And I would elbow my way out onto the porch and I would just sit, outside in dark and just drink. Just to oblivion. And then the next morning, inevitably, I would wake up and I wouldn't know how the day had ended. And I'd be terrified. Did I hurt somebody? Did I hurt her? Is the car here? All of those things. And I have a moment where I was really ashamed you know, and I'd feel like so down and low because I keep doing this and I keep telling myself like, I'm not going to do it anymore. And I'd make this promise and it was like so pure and so honest. And it was, you know, like, I'm not going to drink again. And I'd make it for a good reason. I said, I'm not going to do it because I'm hurting the people in my life that I love the most, you know, and I'm not going to do it anymore. And so then I'd talk to her that morning. We'd have whatever fight we'd have to have based on what happened last night, whether I remembered it or not. And, she'd go to work. And I would, maybe sleep for a little bit. And then I would go get some greasy food, kind of soak that stuff up, drink some water, get a good 2.5 hours of work done. And then it would be about 2 o'clock and the idea in my head, which just made perfect sense, was I just need to go get a 12 pack, you know, so I can get through that right before she comes home. It just happened over and over again. But in my mind, I wasn't an alcoholic. I had a job. And I had a home I lived in. I wasn't divorced. I had all these things that I thought meant an alcoholic and I didn't know. And, so when I started going to AA, I started to, well, the difference, what it, the hook for me was I started to hear you guys describe, alcoholism, what it was like for you when you're drinking. And the thing that really started to sink in for me was when you guys would describe not just like the way it felt when you drank, but the way it felt when you didn't drink. And so I kind of went through this phase early in Alcoholics Anonymous where everybody, you know, they come up to you, hey man, you got to get a home group. You got to get a sponsor, you know, do all this stuff. And so I knew that was important. So I asked this guy to be my sponsor. And then I spent the next like 4 months literally trying to avoid this guy. Like I'd know the meetings he was going to. You go that way, I go this way. And, but it was good because when anybody, you know, I'm still the new guy. And so they're like, hey, did you get a sponsor? I'm like, yeah, I got a sponsor. Don't worry about it. I'm good. Don't worry about it. And so I am just really not drinking, you know, I'm really just, I've crammed that plug so far in the jug and I'm just mashing it in, holding it in. And, you know, the strange thing was life didn't seem to get much better. And I heard people talking to me and they're like, you know, stop drinking and everything's great. And so I'm about 3, 4, 5 months sober and like at work, I can't have conversations with people that I work with. Like I'm telling the owners of my company that they don't know how to do it. You know, like I'm that guy. Nothing anybody is saying to me is right. Sure as hell, I'm not getting enough credit for the work I'm doing. You know, around the house, I'm just like a nightmare to be around. I am full of rage and hate and I'm just mean. And, it's like in my head the whole time, this like thing that keeps repeating is like, don't these people understand the sacrifice I'm making? I haven't had a drink in like 4 or 5 months for you people. You know, give me a break, you know, and I'm just getting so angry and I'm starting to have moments and nights and all nights where I feel like I'm just coming apart, you know, and, I'm feeling crazy. And, you know, what's going through my head is, you know, those people in those meetings, they drink and then they didn't drink and now they're all happy. And that's not what I'm dealing with. So I start to figure I got some other stuff wrong with me is kind of what I'm telling myself. You know, and I've heard that referred to now by my grand sponsor as being terminally unique. In my head, I'm making myself so different and unique that it is a terminal situation. It could kill me. And, you know, but I'm still going to these meetings almost out of spite for my wife at the time. And I'm in this meeting and I am so close to just coming apart. And I hear somebody, this guy say this thing and I know he had said it like 50 times, but I had never heard it. I probably heard the words, but I never had like been quiet enough to let it get in and just hear what he was saying. And what he said was, for an alcoholic, alcohol isn't their problem. It's their solution. And he said, if you just take alcohol away, things aren't going to get better. In fact, it's probably going to get a lot worse without a sufficient substitute. And for some reason, when that guy said that, that might have hit me like a ton of bricks. I kind of sat back in my seat and I thought about it and I said, I don't have any substitute. I got nothing. It's just me and trying to hold that plug in the jug. And the other thing that went through my mind is that maybe, you know, I've heard Alcoholics Anonymous, I've heard people say it's a simple program for complicated people. And I think what I realized that night is that Alcoholics Anonymous is a simple program for people who think they're complicated. And that was me. What got clear in my head on that night was that maybe my problem is just that I'm an alcoholic and that, you know, the spiritual malady, and without a sufficient substitute, I'm doomed to drink, eventually die the alcoholic death, or just die of some other horrible manner just because I can't stand the way that I'm feeling in my own skin. And so I knew what to do at that point. I already had the sponsor. I had his phone number. So I just called him up and got honest with him. And basically since that day, I've become an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous and a sponsorable member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started to just meet with my sponsor, read out of the big book. He gave me some real simple stuff early on, like, you know, I needed to go to 4 meetings a week. I needed to call 3 guys a day. And I needed to be a member of a home group and have a job in that home group, keep those commitments. And I needed to start putting my hand out to see if other guys needed help. You know, he always said, if I'm a paragraph ahead in the big book, I can help people that aren't that far. And, you know, so I think in my head, I was always looking for something to be a lot more complicated, especially this, whatever this fix was that was going to solve this complicated thing that is me. What happened for me early on is I just started saying yes. Like, I just started getting in the car. My sponsor used to go to this meeting out of town. And at the time, it was like, I don't know, Travis, is like an hour and 20 minutes from town. And, you know, we get in the car every Tuesday and go down, and just spending, you know, basically 3.5 hours with some guys that have been sober a while in Alcoholics Anonymous, and not just in meetings, but like in that car ride down, hearing about great things going on in their life, terrible things that are going on in their life, and, you know, people asking questions. And the cool thing was the answer that we always got in there was Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I got to see people screw up. I got to see people do the right thing. And I just became like completely surrounded by Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just kind of turned my life over to AA. You know, when it talks about that step 3, a decision to turn our will and life over to a power greater than ourselves. You know, at that time, when I was reading through the book with my sponsor, I was kind of digging my heels in. I wanted to make a fight about a lot of things. You know, I was being resistant. And when the God topic came up, I was really resistant. And, you know, he asked me a simple question. If I had ever been sober this long in my life before, and I said, no, I hadn't. And he said, well, do you think you've done that on your own? And I said, no, sponsor, I don't think I did do that on my own. He said, would you say Alcoholics Anonymous did that for you? And I was like, yes. And he said, would you say Alcoholics Anonymous is a power greater than you? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, that's good enough for now. And so the decision that I made was a decision to go through the rest of the steps, and a decision to get in the car, and a decision to call people back, and a decision to put my hand up. That's the decision I made. And so what I found out is that, like, over a long period of time, being open to Alcoholics Anonymous, being honest with a sponsor, you know, I've changed despite me. You know, I also hear me talk a lot sometimes about, like, I got to work on this, or I got to work on my character defects. And everybody has different experiences, but I have never had success working on myself. I have actually, though, in AA had a lot of success trying my best to get out of the way, to let God into my life and let AA into my life. And I find when I do that, all these problems that I think are problems sometimes turn out not to even to be problems. You know, and I guess the other story I'll just share, I know y'all want me to shut up to get to the main act. Travis is getting geared up over there. I could see him. Hey, Trav. There are times when I don't know it at the time, but it sounds like crude, but it's like I'm getting closer to a drink. And all that means is I'm getting farther away from Alcoholics Anonymous. There was one experience I had where very frustrated time. Again, I was feeling like, just the same old drumbeat of I'm not getting the respect I think I deserve for something. And, my wife asked me to go get her something at Best Buy, and it was an electronics cord, it was one of these like power cords, you know. And I'm really frustrated because why the hell can she take care of this on her own? But anyway, so I go to the store, get there, and you try to get a power cord at Best Buy. I don't know if any of you ever tried this, but you walk in the store, and you're like, where do I go? There's phones there. There's computers there. There's like electronics in the middle. I don't know where to go. So now I'm mad because the people that lay out these stores are out to get me. And then I go and I finally find the phone and the power cord. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be the right one or not, because I'm not going to get home and have it not fit and everything. I got all this stuff. So I took my phone out and I opened up the cord just to make sure it's just the same phone as I do. I plugged it in and it fit. And I was like, all right, it's the right one. So then I looked at the price and it was like $40, $40-something. And I was just so pissed. I was like, you know, these guys aren't going to do it too. They're not going to get me either. And so I took the cord and I took it and I started wrapping it around my hand. I put it in my pocket. And I walked out and I got home and I just threw it on the counter for us. Here's your cord, you know. So I just stole it. I don't know. I was like 6 years sober at the time, sponsoring somebody, you know. And I remember I was so just, I couldn't believe that I had done something like that at that point. And why I wanted to share that is because about what I didn't do, you know, at the time I put my sponsor on such a pedestal, like I didn't want him to know about like how poorly I was behaving. So I went through a period of time, I didn't tell anybody about that. And I stuck out of meetings, and I'd be sitting in meetings, people are sharing. It's like everything everybody shared in a meeting, I was just like, just annoyed me, you know. Or it was about, you know, making amends or honesty or something. And it was like everything I heard, it felt less like, I just didn't feel connected with you at all. And I got further and further away. And once again, I heard somebody sharing it in AA, their experience of being sober, being sponsored, and coming up short. In this case, they stole some type of food from a restaurant they were. And they made amends for it. And then it was like sometime later they did it again. And I just remember having this feeling, it's like, I don't know why I always want to make myself be so different or so unique or so special that I can't just be an alcoholic who screws up and needs to go back and be honest with a sponsor. And so I got honest with my sponsor about that and made amends. I had made amends when I first came into AA, shoplifting. So I knew exactly what I needed to do and got some direction and took care of that. And so it's like it's the same things that we have to do, but for some reason I dress it up like, I don't know why I would think that wouldn't apply now. And the reason I mention that is because, you know, one of the things Billy said when he kicked us off here is talk about, you know, what it was like and recovery and being sober, but also in this like situation we're in right now, you know. So I got sick a couple weeks ago and I had a fever and, well, it's cough and everything, and I tested negative for the flu and all this stuff. So I'm all like, oh, worried. And turns out somebody at my church got tested positive with the COVID-19 virus. So I was like, oh, gosh, and I sent a note to anybody that was at that service, which I was at. And so I asked the doctor if I could get tested. And of course, this was last week, and they were like, no. Basically, you had to be a sports star or a politician, or you're dying if you're going to get tested. But now on, so he just said, basically assume you have it. And I was like, I don't think I have it. But so I've been like quarantined down in my basement. So it's like every, you guys know what we're doing. We're all like at home, but it sucks too for me because my kids and my wife are upstairs and I'm down here. And so it's frustrating. I can communicate with them like we're doing right now, like FaceTime or whatever. And you know, so I keep thinking about this and it's like, well, you know, sobriety and how do we stay sober? And you know, the answer is it's the same way we stay sober during the holidays or on vacation or whatever. You know, it's, you know, we have to pray. We have to go to our meetings. We have to talk to our sponsor. We got to talk to other alcoholics. I got to keep my commitments, whatever they are, whatever they look like right now. I got to be where I say I'm going to be or do what I say I'm going to do. And, you know, nothing changes. It's the same solution for me. So the only thing that's changed right now, what I'm just trying to get used to, and you guys, I apologize. I've never done anything like this on like a Zoom meeting. But, you know, so it feels like just what I've got to be right now is so open-minded. Like I can't go to my home group and I can't go to the meet. There are great meetings all around me. I can't go to them. And I can sit here and be frustrated. It's like, I got to sit on a computer and see. This is, that's the same attitude I can take into an AA meeting in a church, you know, and just be like resentful that I have to go to this meeting and not another. So I need to ask myself, what can I bring to this meeting? Even if it's a Zoom meeting or even if it's a phone call with another alcoholic or something. And so that's what I'm doing today is I'm trying to be very open-minded about what AA looks like today and next week or next month. And I'm going to try to, you know, if it's unusual or uncomfortable for me, I realize it's like, that's the point. It's not for me to be comfortable. The point of me is to try to see what I can offer to another alcoholic. Whenever I put that forefront of my mind, you know, everything else just kind of takes care of itself. So yeah, so I'm really grateful to have the chance to talk to you guys. And hey, for like 15 minutes, I felt like I'm not in my basement, which is kind of cool. It's really good to see all you people. So, I hope I get to see you guys all face to face here soon, but, Billy, thanks a lot for asking me to share.
Hey, thanks, Andy. That was great.